and welcome to Food Rebels. This is the podcast that brings you brands, chefs, and live on-air tastings. A show that is dedicated to the more rebellious side of the food world, where we celebrate people who have challenged the status quo. I'm AJ Sharp, taste expert, food writer, great taste judge, business owner. And with me today, we have producer, co-host Georgie.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Nice to have you back. And today we are talking about snacking.
Yeah, snacks.
Which we love. We love snacks, don't we?
Well, I don't actually tend to snack that much, but I have three children who snack a lot. And that is generally the theme of the day, every day. What can I snack on? Yeah. So I know a lot about snacks, but I don't generally snack myself.
I snack a lot. I probably don't really eat proper meals most of the time. I mainly just go from one snack to another snack. Mm. And actually, a big pot of hummus and a couple of crackers for me is lunch. Like, that's, I'm done. That's, okay. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I love hummus, so I'm well on there with it. But I would have that with a salad generally rather than a snack on its own. But
yeah, well, that's you are much more healthy than me, much better than I am.
I don't think that. Maybe have a bit more time.
Possibly. But the snack industry is huge and it's growing. It's worth 2.8 billion in 2022, and it's only gone up, I think, since then. It's a serious business. And we've got two guests on the show who are shaking up the snack industry.
They certainly are.
So let's introduce you guys. We've got Chester Robinson from Raise Snacks. Welcome, Chester.
Hello. Thank you for having me today. Pleasure to be here.
Can you just tell me a little bit about Raise Snacks?
Yeah, sure. So Raise Snacks is inspired by my mother's homemade granola. We make clusters of nuts and seeds, which are all natural, super nutritious and taste amazing. At the core of all of our products is a cluster of nuts, seeds, oats, puffed rice. And they're a great natural source of protein, fiber and antioxidants. And then what we do is we coat the clusters in really tasty ingredients like maple syrup, chocolate and caramel.
Oh.
To produce this, I love that sound, to produce this sort of treat-like experience, this indulgent treat-like experience that also delivers some great nutrients.
I love it. What a cool idea for a snack brand and a business. We've also got Hannah McCollum from Chickpea. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And can you tell us a little bit about Chickpea?
Yeah, I started the brand because I was a private chef for many years and very passionate about food waste and saw a huge amount of food go to waste when I was working at private events or big sporting events like Wimbledon, and behind the scenes it was pretty upsetting to see what happens. So I was always making hummus from my leftovers and wanted to create healthier plant-based food, which was also natural. So hummus was in a growing market and it's a very versatile product. And so I came up with the various flavors that we have now from seeing what vegetables I was witnessing go to waste the most.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, everyone loves hummus, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So if you can get a better tasting, higher quality and natural hummus, then...
Then why not? Why wouldn't you? Exactly. I mean, my kids will demolish an entire pot of hummus without really blinking an eye.
Really? I think kids... one of the biggest markets for hummus now.
Really?
It is amazing.
Yeah. I do get annoyed though when I've bought the really posh hummus for me and my friends to have some posh crisps and posh hummus, and then I realise that half a cucumber's disappeared and the entire pot's gone. He's like, oh, it's really good, that hummus. Like, oh great, it's gone into a 10-year-old who really has not tasted any of the nuances.
Healthy snacking though.
But
rather
healthy
than
snacking.
Health digestive biscuits or something else, you know.
Right, so because it's high in protein and...
High in protein, very high in fibre, ours in particular. Mm. Healthy fats, you know, and vegetables, tahini, full of nutritional benefits.
And it's a massive waste product of the vegan industry, isn't it? Because the aquafaba, the water left behind by chickpeas, is used as an egg replacement.
Exactly, and we actually use it in our product as the replacement for water, because you need to have water to make a hummus. Ideally, you need more liquid. So we've started putting aquafaba back into it as well.
Oh, but yeah, genius.
You can mayonnaise, egg replacements, cocktails.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So cool. I love it. So what made you start it? It was literally you're working one day in the kitchen. Paint the picture for us.
Yeah, I mean, I was abroad cooking for a family for 3 weeks, and that was the main experience I remember out of all the cooking jobs that I've done, where I was always making dips after like the dinner for them to have lunch the next day, and it would be a kind of summer holiday and lots of different colorful dishes. And so I had multiple dips on the table, and everyone was like, what's the dip of the day was the theme that kind of quite quickly caught on. And so I was like, gosh, because the kids were all eating the dips, which then the mums were like, this is great because they're eating like really healthy vegetables that are hidden. I was like saving them food waste and saving money ultimately by not always buying new food and then putting it in the bin at the end of the day if it, you know, didn't get finished after dinner. So when I got back to England, I was just slightly unsatisfied in the job that I was at. But I then was making a kind of business plan for my desk and making hummus every time I went home for dinner. I hate cooking for myself. So it was just like blend.
Amazing.
So what you said from your desk, so that wasn't your private chef job, that was separate.
No. Private chefing was very part-time, just here and there, something I loved.
So you had a desk-based job before this?
Yes, yes.
What kind of industry were you in?
It was like a private family office. I had fingers in many pies. It was like project manager doing film production to running, helping run events at hotels to running sports boxes, organising my boss's travel itineraries, complete array of stuff and just learning how to work Excel's properly, diary management, all those kind of things, which I think is actually quite important to get a
great basis
before you start in your own business. So yeah, it was amazing. I absolutely loved it.
Amazing. I was always really fascinated to hear what industry people were in before they jumped across.
Yeah.
We've had people in here. I mean, the guy from Holy Moly was a BT engineer before suddenly being like, guacamole, we should really talk more about guacamole. And it was like, what? I love it. Really, really cool.
So how did you go from being in that one job to then starting up a business? Because obviously there's a huge step between deciding to leave your job and making a brand or a successful brand. Where do you start? How do you start? Where do you, you know, what did you start with? I'm presuming the product and tasting and all that kind of stuff, but then you've got packaging, you've got logos, how did you get into that?
I think I'd listened to my father a lot, who's quite entrepreneurial, and just like had it ingrained in the back of my head and didn't necessarily know how to, but I had at university started my own like skirts business, and from that I got given like a business management course as off the back of like winning an award. And I don't know, in a way I don't actually know if any of those skills came into it, so I guess I just found everything chicken and egg. I was like, right, logically, how do we, you know, go and do the research on the market, then start creating the recipes and finding the first thing I did was just contact loads of farmers to find out actually where I'd be able to get my surplus ingredients from. And then I was kind of directed to London wholesale markets, because that was where you needed to start on a smaller volume, because farmers would require like truck loads of, and that wasn't sustainable to start with. So then I found my suppliers, and then I would make the recipes at home. And then I did focus groups with my friends on which recipes were the nicest. And then from that, I was then looking at packaging at the same time as reaching out to little independents to start stocking. And then I was meeting a lot of founders all the time. Just
how are you managing to meet other founders?
I went to a lot of networking events, and then slowly I'd speak to people who would then be like, oh, you should speak to that person. And then I'd reach out to them, and they were amazing with their time. Like, they say, come and see us in the office and I'll sit with you for half an hour. And then that would just slowly line your journey up, really, and help with various decisions. You know, someone said, go and get a manufacturer, don't produce it in your kitchen because the headache of that. So then I was like, right, so then I would go and find a manufacturer.
That's really interesting. That's so lovely to hear that people are so generous with their time,
so
they understand what you're going through, what you've been through, and they're really wanting to help you succeed at the same time. That's really lovely to hear.
Yeah.
It's not closed off.
I think that is the food industry, though. I think, you know, having been to many bread and jam events and things, I'm always blown away when I'm hosting a panel of how generous people are sharing how they got somewhere, or even their distributors and their contact details and things like that. You're just like, this is amazing, because everyone genuinely wants everyone else to do really well. I think when you've got a good brand and it's got some purpose behind it and it's got something important to it,
I would say exactly that. When you've got a purpose and they really like the brand, they really want to help you.
And you've got real focus, you're coming in with a real focused product, and so it's very easy for somebody to say, oh, I know how I can help you, because that is so focused. I think sometimes when things are really broad, they don't know which direction to help you in. So by sticking with, you know, with this gorgeous array of hummuses that we have in front of us, I can see that it's really much easier for people to offer you and give you really select advice.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to the food waste element that you had. So this was the wholesalers in London who at the end of the day hadn't sold their produce, or it was about to go off, or what? How did that?
Yeah, so their day like starts at midnight and it finishes at like 6 a.m. because it's all the distribution vans go in and collect before then restaurants and caterers open. So I'd go around, well, maybe it ends at 8, I'd go around 6-ish, so it wasn't too late. And I made friends with this guy who was just so helpful, and every time I'd be like, Hannah, over there, he's got he's got waste beetroots. And then next time, like, that guy's got the carrots. And so I was then able to get a grip on who sold what, and I just wander around. And basically, this was such early days, I would then be collecting the goods, as it were, and taking them home in my car. And that's when I was producing in my kitchen the first year. And then I moved, when I started with a manufacturer, which was in North East London, I had a guy who was a driver who collected, you know, vegetables for people, and he knew who had all the waste. So he would get it from different suppliers each day and then deliver to my manufacturer, because I just couldn't do that anymore.
Keep up with that.
So
yeah,
that was the next step. But my manufacturer, Hannah, like, he'd ring me up saying, I can't use these spinach, like, they're all bruised underneath, everything's brown, it's going to really affect your shelf life. I was like, oh, that's the whole point, you know. Yeah, I want you to use the raised.
I've just cracked on, because I can't help myself, and tried your spinach and the beetroot. So you've used waste veg like spinach, beetroot, and what are in these ones over here?
This is carrot, ginger, turmeric, and then we've got a velvet, which we launch later on to basically complement the range, because a lot of people will want to try a flavoured one and then want to try a, normally buy a plain one alongside, so it's kind of helping with the double purchase, as it were. And then most recently, we've launched our truffle hummus, which is in collaboration with the Truffle Hunter, who is a brand close to me.
I know the Truffle Hunter.
Do you? Yeah. And I don't know why. I just love truffle, and they have a lot of, you know, there's no such thing as surplus truffles, really, because they come in all shapes and sizes. Mm. But I was fascinated by the truffle industry. And
it's growing as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's
people
growing.
Love truffle. And these are posh hummuses, aren't they?
Like,
they're really lovely. They've got complex flavours. There's a lot going on there. That ginger, turmeric and carrot one is, it's sweet, but it's savoury, but it's umami. There's so much going on there. It's absolutely delicious.
So our beetroot one is our best seller by quite a long way. It's fascinating, but I think the truffle is...
The beetroot one is...
Yes, but the truffle now, I would say, is hopefully going to be in close competition.
Okay, please leave that one behind. That one is done.
The truffle one is special. That is really lovely.
I could probably eat that whole pot.
Yeah, me too.
So that one's going in for great taste, and then the beetroot and the velvet have the Great Taste Awards.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So what star rating do they have? They have a one star.
I think they're one star.
That's really good.
But truffle, let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
Let's see where we go.
There's a lovely, like you say, the textures are all really varied, but that the flavour of truffle really does come through.
It's strong, and I think we wanted to make sure that if we were going to launch a truffle one, yes, it's going to be more expensive to produce, but don't kind of, you know.
I totally agree. It's got to actually taste a truffle, because there are quite a few things. Truffles, supposedly truffle's favourite things. You're like, that doesn't taste funny. I can't taste that at all.
Exactly.
I have that in restaurants sometimes. When you order a truffle thing, you're like, I'm sorry, that doesn't taste a truffle at all. You know,
I know, it's annoying.
It's really annoying, especially if you've kind of paid a premium to have some truffle on it.
But I think it's one of those things, isn't it? Because it's quite Marmite. People love it or hate it. But I think the people that love it really love it. So they want it to really punch with truffle. So it's a bit like there's no point doing it halfway, is there?
Exactly. And having a high quality truffle oil, like there's
really matters.
It really matters, yeah.
And also, I hadn't realised loads of truffle oils actually have never even seen a truffle.
Really?
Yeah. It's like essence of some kind of truffle, but it's not.
Once met it at a party and now pretends to be its best friend.
Exactly. Because there is obviously, because it's such a high value product, there are then people try and make offshoots of cheaper versions. And it's not actually.
Yeah, you've got to go to someone good like the Truffle Hunter, who's, you know, doing it properly.
And tell us about these. I'm holding up a snack pot that you've got.
Yes, our new development, which definitely took a long time. It's basically an ambient snack pot, which means it's fridgeless, doesn't need refrigeration. It's got a 12-month shelf life and is a game changer, because it can access many more areas of the food industry that we weren't able to before.
And I mean, for kids' snack boxes, it means it can sit at the back of a sweaty classroom all day and still be fine, doesn't it?
Exactly. So great for lunch boxes. You can buy them in packs on Amazon. We've got a wholesaler who distributes to a lot of the offices. So offices, health sector and education.
Yeah, so just to explain what it is, exactly. Yes. It's a divided pot. one side you've got breadsticks and the other side you've got the hummus, and yep. then it's in a nice little sleeve which says what it is. So
that's got 11 o'clock slump written all over it to me.
Yeah. I think, how amazing that you've made it like to be so stable though and last for such a long time. That's incredible.
Probably one of the biggest challenges I've had to do like with the product, and I think that's why it's quite valuable. And we realise that there's a gap in the market kind of for healthy on the go snacking, which isn't kind of a bar or nut that's just like, and people love hummus, so why not be able to make it more accessible for kind of on the go at the till shopping.
Absolutely.
And you know, hiking, sports, shove it in your backpack or all
those
kinds
of things.
Oh no,
I love it.
But it, and it doesn't have anything nasty in it, it's all natural as well, and that was the important part that I'm always going to stick to natural.
No, I love a savoury snack for the 11 o'clock slump, but I love a sweet snack for the kind of 3 o'clock slump in the afternoon.
Yes.
So, Rays, this has come from your mum's recipe and you've developed it and moved it onwards.
Yeah, so I suppose the idea for Rays all comes from my mum and her homemade granola, which she started making for me and my siblings. So I've got three siblings.
Where do you sit in the order? I'm always fascinated.
Top of the pile.
Top of the pile.
Yeah, top of the pile. Yeah.
You're in charge.
Yeah, some say. I don't know. they're big characters. But anyway, my mum started making granola for us because she was buying granola. And when you have a big family and you're buying things like granola and fruit juice, it can get very expensive very quickly. Yeah. So my mum had a look at what went into granola, realised that it was a very simple makeup of, you know, nuts, seeds, oats, some honey. And she started making it herself and giving it to us kids. And it got to this that she became like totally obsessed with making granolas. And it was amazing. And she'd put it in glass jars, wrap a ribbon around it, send it to our family, friends, all sorts of stuff. Aww. And when I moved back home after university, I would take my mum's granola with me to work because, you know, I loved it as a snack and I'm a very busy, active person. So I love, you know, going for a run, playing football, tennis, climbing, basically anything active, sign me up for it, I'm down.
Love
and
that.
I needed that snack to sort of fuel my busy day. And whenever I couldn't take my mum's granola for whatever reason, maybe because we'd all finished it, but whenever I couldn't take it with me, I'd look for an alternative on the supermarket shelves. And what I'd often find was, you know, protein bars, which I'm not naming names here, but they are packed full of weird artificial ingredients that no one can pronounce, let alone know what it is. And not just that, but it almost tastes like eating sweetened gloop. It's not very tasty.
Do you know what? I had one on Saturday, and to say I could not chew my way through this thing, it was so, made my mouth stick together. I remember thinking, what am I doing? Why am I eating this? But I had just done some exercise and I thought it was the right thing to eat. But, you know, now I need to know. I need to get some Rays snacks.
I'm the same. I've been there on multiple occasions where I've eaten one of these protein bars and it's not been satisfying at all.
No.
And who knows whether it's actually any good for you, right? On the other side of the spectrum, you've got, and this is what I do, I go and pick up some popcorn, which is natural, tastes good, but also it's like eating a bag of air at times. I'd eat a 100-gram bag of popcorn and I'd be starving after it, right? You're not getting as many nutrients from a bag of popcorn as you are from nuts. So I thought there was a bit of a gap in the market for something like a snacking granola. I started to explore it and I suppose wanted everyone to start eating my mum's nuts.
Love it. Can we try some of them?
Absolutely, yeah. Please do.
Which one would you recommend we start
with?
So,
the maple pecans won a great taste audit. Have you got a sweet tooth?
Yes.
Brilliant. So that should hopefully satisfy that sweet tooth.
Oh, that did not come out how I thought it was going to look like.
Yeah, lovely little clusters.
Yeah, so it's a cluster.
It's a cluster of nuts and seeds.
It's a cluster,
yeah.
Okay. So it's is it coated?
It is coated, yeah. And then so
they stick together on this coating?
So we bind the cluster using chicory root fibre.
Okay.
So there's nut seeds, oats, and a bit of puff rice in the cluster. And then we coat it with, you know, either this maple seasoning here or we have chocolate orange, which you might want to try as well.
Oh, I love a bit of chocolate orange.
That's coated in chocolate with a bit of orange oil.
Pecan is lovely. It's not, it is sweet. It is sweet, but it's like, there's also, I suppose, the richness that comes from the nuts. So you get that kind of protein kick and Oh, lovely.
Do you know, I'd be really intrigued to try that on my children. My son will eat all nuts, plain nuts, whatever. He's very happy to have a... I have a bowl of nuts out all the time at home. He'll go and snack. My daughter refuses to eat nuts. And therefore, I do make my own granola, but she won't eat it because it's got seeds and nuts in it. But I wonder if it was this, because she's such a sweet tooth person, whether she would eat this. And I actually think she might. I think it would. She wouldn't really notice that if I didn't tell her it was nuts, obviously. No. I think she would eat this.
I was speaking to a doctor over the weekend who feeds her children Raise. And yeah, they seem to enjoy it because of the sweetness. But she's happy to give it to them because of the nutrients in it. The challenge that we have with kids is that nuts aren't allowed in schools. So yeah,
It's a real barrier.
Mm.
It really is. And
when the main problem is actually peanut, and none of these have peanuts in,
do they?
That's
correct. Yeah.
And my mild allergy. I never call it an allergy because people freak out, but I can't really eat peanuts. Mm. But I can eat all the other nuts just
fine.
Do
you know what, actually, though, thinking about allergies, I'm not even allowed to have hummus because you have sesame allergies.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So a lot of the schools now are sesame free as well, so you can't even take hummus in. I remember in lockdown, that was really, you know, we had to make our own packed lunches and stuff. The list of things that we weren't able to take in. But I actually started making hummus without tahini in it.
We can offer a tahini-free one.
Which kind of did solve that problem. But yeah, it's quite restrictive. It's very restrictive for people.
No, but I love that these don't have peanuts in, because for me...
Can I try one of the other flavors?
I love nuts. Absolutely. I love the taste of nuts. It's just that the peanut ones make my mouth itch, which I don't think
I
is a good thing.
I get raw nuts.
With raw nuts?
Walnuts.
Oh, walnuts.
I get itchy tongue.
I don't actually know if it's officially an allergy, but it's certainly not that comfortable.
I eat them anyway.
Do you want some of those? Which one am I trying now? Dark chocolate and sea salt. Ooh, lovely.
Yum.
Yeah, I like to... if you're into chocolate orange, then it tends to be pretty popular. It's a bit like a healthy Terry's.
Yeah, I love a chocolate orange. And what I love, you know, one of the other snacks I have is chocolate-coated almonds as a pick-me-up in the afternoon, which I think comes from Forest Feast or someone. But these are lovely. Like, they're just, really they've nice. Got all the different flavours in. There's an umami kind of richness there.
Oh, that's my favourite, the dark chocolate one.
And I think I can see it being really satisfying. Like, if you've had a whole bag of these, and they're in kind of individual portions here. If you've had a whole bag of these, I can totally see that being... something that fills you up, because there's all the different proteins and things
healthy
in there.
Healthy fats, all of it, yeah.
Where do you source your nuts from?
So all over, because there's a range of nuts in there, we source them from all over. We work with a manufacturer who's based up in York.
Okay.
So it's all produced up there. And yeah, sent down to our warehouses in Swindon and Nantwich.
Oh, I live very near to Swindon. how did you start? How did you... start this process from?
Yeah, so there are a ton of similarities and parallels of Hannah's story, as you can imagine. So, you know, I was trying to take my mum's recipe, my mum's granola, and...
Does she still make your granola?
She does.
Does she?
Yeah, she does.
Excellent,
but
I love that.
Not as much, which is probably a good sign. Maybe Raise is filling the void, I suppose, I don't know. Anyway, but so I was trying to take this recipe that my mum had come up with and scale it, right? Which is challenging, and I don't have a background in food, so, you know, I had no idea where to start. And
what is your background?
So, all sorts of things. I've done so many different jobs. I suppose you could probably say that my background is sales and marketing. I worked in tech for a bit. I worked for an ad agency. So, definitely say it's sort of sales and marketing.
All useful skill sets for running a business later.
Exactly. And in many ways, the reason I decided to do those jobs was because I wanted to launch a business. I knew I'd have to have an understanding of how to sell a product, also an understanding of how to market and position a brand. Right. So those things help with that. But, you know, when you actually launch this product, you start with no clue on, you know, what it takes to actually create a product, see it in a pack, on shelf. The first thing I did was... you know, mum, can we turn the kitchen into a commercial kitchen? And
that'd be fine, right?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
You're not doing anything.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Which we weren't able to do anyway because she didn't have enough sinks. So I then started to look for a manufacturer, which is really, really challenging. And lots of small food producers will go through that. most manufacturers want to work on pretty large MOQs, which is in many ways, most of the time, prohibitive for small businesses. You can't afford it. So I sort of thought, why don't I reverse engineer it a little bit? Why don't I create the brand, the website, and start using that to sell the idea, the vision to the manufacturers in the hope that they would take a punt on me and work on a smaller MOQ. And that worked out. I managed to find this.
For the listeners, what's an MOQ?
Minimum order quantity.
Got it.
So that worked out. We ended up finding this amazing manufacturer who we've been working with ever since. He's sort of become this sort of strange like father figure to me. I love him. He's amazing to work with. And we ended up launching in 2021. This is, of course, after having found someone to produce the roll film that the clusters go into and also the SRPs. So it was right at the end of 2021 that we launched a pallet. So it was December 2021 and a pallet of clusters ended up at my mum's house. And as you can imagine, she wasn't too happy about it.
I can just see that in the sitting room, trying to have a drink on a Saturday night, cup of tea, putting it on top of your pallet.
That's exactly what happened.
She was so pleased with you that day, wasn't she?
She was, and I was under pressure to get that stock moving quickly. So maybe it was a good thing. But so we managed to start sending out stock at the beginning of 2022. So at that point, most people were ordering via the website. I was jumping on my bike, taking a box of Raise with me in my backpack with a note and hand delivering clusters of nuts and seeds to everyone, which I think a lot of people experience something similar to that with their journey, right? You really do start from the ground up. And
I delivered to Fortnum's weekly on my bicycle.
Yeah.
In the back, here's another trick.
I love this. I love that you're on your bike as well. Always. There's just something
still am.
Wonderful.
So wholesome. Yeah. Still wholesome about it.
Yeah, you need energy. Yeah. You need some serious energy to do it.
Just stop, have some snacks, keep going on your bike. Love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And then, yeah, so, and then I think after that, we obviously tried the product in retailers. So I grew up in Kensal Rise in Northwest London, and there are a bunch of small convenience stores around there that were willing to stock our products, which was great. And we got to kind of test that environment out, see if it worked for us. And then we ended up doing a pop-up store called Ray the Store, which you may have heard of before.
Yeah.
Fantastic concept, supporting small consumer goods brands. We got really lucky off the back of that. We ended up getting onto an accelerated program with Sainsbury's. The journey, it sort of moved relatively quickly, and we're now listed in Sainsbury's, which is super exciting.
Fantastic. And how much for a pack of Ray's snacks?
$1.25.
Very reasonable.
That's and very reasonable.
How about you, Hannah? Where's chickpea stocked? Where can we buy it?
You can find it on Ocado, Booths, Whole Foods, Planet Organic, and Co-op Societies, and the new Snapbot on Amazon as well. And then on Independence across country.
Fantastic. That is absolutely excellent. I will be putting both of these on the shopping list from now on. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much to both of you. I can't believe we're out of time already.
Oh, wow. But
thank already. You. That was quick.
It's flown, hasn't it? Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you to Chester Robinson from Ray's Snacks. And thank you to Hannah McCollum from Chickpea. Thank you for coming on the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
And thank you to Georgie for coming and co-hosting and producing this brilliant show. You've been listening to Food Rebels, which is available on radio stations around the UK. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Audible. Please remember to subscribe and rate us, hopefully 5 stars if you think it so. It makes a huge difference to our podcast. We're also on Instagram at food_rebels. Give us a follow and make sure you taste the rebellion.